We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to Seahawks Man to Man podcast, powered by The Athletic. Shout out to the company. My name is Michael Sean Dugar. I'm here with my co-host Christopher Kidd. Make sure you follow us both up on the tweet machine. You can follow me at Mike Dugar. Chris, talk to him.
What is up, everybody? It's your boy Christopher Kidd. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at CKIDD206, and that's CKID206.
A special guest with us covers the San Francisco 49ers for The Athletic. I think he's our most frequented guest on the show. I'm pretty sure, since they play twice a year. We have the homie Matt Barrows. Matt, what up?
What up, guys? Thanks for having me on again.
No problem. We love it every time. I'm going to give a shout-out to Matt for grinding out a book amid covering a team that went to the Super Bowl. He wrote, "If These Walls Could Talk, San Francisco 49ers, Stories from San Francisco 49ers Sideline, Locker Room, and Press Box." And I'm really glad Matt was able to get it out. I remember seeing him Monday Night Football Week 10 last year. Just he told me about the book, and I'm like, man, well, I think the Niners might have been undefeated at the time. It's like, dude, you're covering the team that's probably going to win the Super Bowl, and you got a book deadline around the same time. Matt, how in the world did you pull that off last season?
Yeah, you probably saw a big frown on my face when you saw me in the Levi's press box there. I mean, I think I was trying to crank out, I don't know, 10,000, 20,000 words a month. At that point, I was trying to get a big chunk of it done before Christmas. The deadline was early February, which of course is when the Super Bowl was. So I would never recommend, Mike, writing a book during a Super Bowl season. You know, you can't always predict it. But the 49ers were coming off a 4-12 season, so I figured, yeah, you know what? I'm gonna have all of January. Of some of February, no problem with this book. It's going to be easy. Well, I remember, I mean, now that it's done, I'm glad I did it, but I remember during the season, during the writing of it, I kept saying to myself, what a stupid mistake you made agreeing to do this book, because it was hard to do, because it's not just writing it, it's calling people. It's getting them on the phone, which is always like 85% of the work. Transcribing it all, and then doing the writing part of it. So it was quite a bit of work.
What's something maybe interesting or unique that you've covered this team for forever, but you know, what did you maybe learn about the team doing all the research for the book?
Well, I mean, this pertains to the Seahawks as much as any team, but the 49ers. So basically, the book is this century of the 49ers. So the 21st century, basically the span that I've been covering this team. And I don't know if there's a team that's been as up and down as the 49ers. They've been to two Super Bowls in that span, and they've also had two-win teams in that span. So it's been just a real roller coaster ride these past 20 years. And one of the takeaways is that if you've got stability in your front office, which the 49ers did not have under Jim Harbaugh and Trent Baalke, but the Seahawks seemed to have, and obviously also stability at the QB spot, that allows you to sustain. I mean, you can sort of absorb the blows of losing guys and retirements and free agency, this, that, and the other. If you've got that sustainability, if you've got that constancy at other areas of your organization.
I assume so. If you covered this century of it, you revisited the Seahawks 49ers rivalry. Obviously, we're in the middle of the new version now, but maybe revisited the one with Colin and Russ at the forefront of it. If you did, kind of, what was fun about maybe revisiting those battles in like the early 2010s?
Well, I mean, I'm glad you brought that up. I can't believe I almost forgot to talk about this, but I was up in the press box for that epic 2013 championship game, where Richard Sherman, just went ape, on Michael Crabtree and Colin Kaepernick at the end on Aaron Andrews afterwards, and that always sort of colored my perception of him. I just thought that was just the weirdest reaction, that he had the 49ers beaten, and he slapped Crabtree on the butt, and he flashed the choke sign at Kaepernick, and he had to sort of be restrained on the sideline. So I sat down with him and I said, what was that all about? What's the backstory there? Why all that animus towards Michael Crabtree? And he walked me through it, and it goes back to that off season. There was a charity softball game that Larry Fitzgerald always throws in Arizona, and I don't want to spoil it all, but there was a confrontation there between Crabtree and Sherman, and as you know, Mike, Sherman does not let go of these things, and a lot of times Sherman sort of, I found can kind of concoct reasons to resent somebody or hate somebody. This was not concocted. This was real, and I documented it in this book. So if you're curious about that, it's all in there. There's some ancillary stuff about that game too. One of the better games, I think everybody agrees, of this century in the NFL. I mean, that was Greeks and Trojans in the Trojan War. That was a battle. So that's revisited, and there's some kind of extra stuff thrown in there.
Before we get to some football, on each preview, we do like to bring up social justice and what other teams have done. Pete Carroll earlier this, right before the season started, basically went out and called out white people to educate themselves and listen to the message that black people have been screaming for such a long time. And I was wondering what the 49ers as an organization or a few players, if anyone has stood out and tried to make a change, and what were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, Kyle Shanahan did the same thing with the same message that it's not okay to just be silent anymore, that white people, allies, have to stand up and be heard this year. And he was very eloquent and moving when he said that. Eric Armstead probably has been the most talkative of all the 49ers on this. He begins every one of his press outings, his Zoom interviews, by talking about social justice issues, different topics and whatnot. So he's been quite vocal about it. And then the 49ers are also opening up Levi's Stadium as a voting center that starts on Halloween, October 31st, and runs through the election. So anybody in this county, Santa Clara County, can go by and drop their ballots off, which I think is a big deal, because Santa Clara County has had a ton of early voting. We all know what the state that U.S. Postal Service is in right now, undermanned. So they're being taxed by all the ballots that are in the mail right now. So dropping off your ballot, can be a big deal, especially if you want it counted before November 3rd. So all of those initiatives, I think, have been helpful. But like I said, I think Eric Armstead has probably led the way for San Francisco.
And didn't Eric Armstead have a role in regards to the 49ers announcing recipients for $1 million social justice grant that was given out early in September as well?
Yeah, he is one of the players who basically chose the recipients, and obviously there are a lot of worthy ones around here. And that's something that was started by Colin Kaepernick, really, figuring out different groups that could use a boost, that could use money, that are doing good in the community. So Eric Armstead has sort of taken that mantle, that role that Colin Kaepernick had when he was here, and he's doing a lot with it.
Yeah, I was going to ask about Colin because, I mean, one of the biggest topics of the summer and continues to be is police violence, and it's something that Colin brought up, you know, very publicly in 2016. In covering all of this, Matt, has there been anything unique to it because you're covering the team that had Colin on it?
Yeah, you know, sadly, you know, those teams have, there's been so much turnover that there's hardly anybody who shared a locker room with Colin Kaepernick anymore here. You know, I was thinking about Kaepernick the other day because he came out in the same draft as Cam Newton. Cam was the number one pick in that draft, and Colin was taken early in the second round. But they've always been very similar in terms of their stats, in terms of what they do well. I remember that draft, you know, Newton had a strong arm, but they kind of measured the mile per hour of when these would-be rookies were throwing that year at the combine. And Colin Kaepernick's arm ended up being a little bit stronger. He's throwing the ball with more velocity. And like I said, I mean, they've had sort of similar careers. Took their teams to the playoffs. Neither guy was, you know, was all that accurate. Threw around 60% completion rate, and of course, have had success in the playoffs. But you know, one guy is a starter in this league, and the other guy can't find a job. And Cam Newton did not look good at all on Sunday in the loss to the 49ers. One of the worst games I've ever seen from him. And, you know, just, you know, this is a topic that's been brought up time and again, but it just raises, you know, if Cam Newton's the starting quarterback, why isn't Colin Kaepernick a starting quarterback? I mean, he can lead any of these teams. He'd be good on Dallas right now. He'd be good on a number of teams. There's no reason, really, why he shouldn't be in this league.
Yeah, Dallas. Who else? The Bears would probably win could probably win their division if they.
Yeah,
had
I was thinking that last night too.
Yeah, no. Anytime I watch Nick Foles, I think about Colin Kaepernick. I'm like, what's going on here? How's this guy on my TV in prime time right now?
Yeah, Colin Kaepernick plus that Bears defense. All of a sudden, you're looking at a team that nobody wants to face in November and December.
Right, especially if you got to go to Chicago. go to Chicago in January. At all, December, for that matter. Speaking of the current 49ers team that just beat up on, they got Cam Newton benched, I think probably for the first time in his career, like ever in life, probably Cam's been benched. How in the world are the Niners still beating the crap out of teams with, I don't know, I have to guess, what, 30 healthy bodies? Like, they got to be the most injured team in the league, and they're still winning by double digits.
Yeah, they've got... 14 guys on IR with a couple more set to go on. So they've got a huge IR list. That defensive line, the secondary, was, you know, beat up for that game against the Patriots. And, you know, one of the reasons is that Kyle Shanahan is good at sort of masking gaps in the team. He did it last year. They were without their starting tackles for a while, Joe Staley and Mike McGlinchey, and he did a good job kind of game planning around that. You know, George Kittle missed some games. Kyle Juszczyk missed some games last year. And the other part, I think, is that the offensive line has kind of found its footing. They replaced Joe Staley with Trent Williams in the offseason. Staley retired in April, and basically the same day they traded for Williams. They've got a new guy at right guard, Daniel Brunskill, and you know, given the COVID situation and the kind of disjointed nature of the offseason, it took a while for that group to settle in, but I think they have, and they've basically done everything around their running game. I mean, it's a very effective running game, and when you run as well as the 49ers do, the passing game comes naturally. So I think that's been the key these last 2 weeks. That's going to be a challenge, having said that, because Deebo Samuel is basically part of their running attack, even though he's a wide receiver. He caught 8 passes against the Rams. Every one of them was behind the line of scrimmage, and he had a lot of yards in that game. So he's basically been an extension of that very powerful, very blue-collar attack, but he's not going to be on hand for this game. So they've got to find a replacement there. They've got to find a way to keep rolling. But that's been sort of the theme this year, rolling despite all these injuries.
Yeah, I think I tweeted it like week three. Like, the Jets and the Giants are both very bad, right? But
yeah.
I mean, with the injuries that the Niners had at the time, they still smoked both those teams in a similar fashion. They would have probably fully healthy, just maybe a little bit more points on offense, but still they put up 30 balls. Even again against the Patriots, just smoked a team that, you know, Seattle, you know, went down to the wire against. With that said, though, this the upcoming schedule is a little tougher. You know, Seattle, Green Bay, New Orleans, got to face the Rams again, you know, see Josh Allen. How confident are you in Shanahan's ability to kind of mask the issues that they have against a tougher slate of opponents?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a challenge. I mean, I think they've got to start scoring in the 30s pretty regularly in order to win some of these games, and they have at times. You mentioned the Giants and the Jets games. You know, we keep waiting for the defense to fall apart. You know, no Nick Bosa, no D Ford. Solomon Thomas is out for the season. DeForest Buckner's been traded. It does not look anything like the defensive line of last year, and they're not performing anything like that. And that was the real key to last season for them. But they're still doing a good job. I mean, defensively, they rank really high in the league, and we keep sloughing it off to, oh, well, they're not playing very good offenses, and that's true. But, you know, one of the reasons they're not playing very good offenses is because they're making those offensive players look bad. They, like you noted, they chased Cam Newton out of a game. They handed Bill Belichick his worst home loss in the history of Bill Belichick and the Patriots. So they're doing something right, and this actually may be a better coaching job for Robert Saleh than he did even last year, because that defense was full of talent. This one is missing it. There's not going to be any Richard Sherman for this game. It could be without Jimmy Ward and Jaquaski Tartt, their starting safeties. So they've got a lot of pressure on them, but somehow they've been able to hold down the fort despite all those missing pieces.
You mentioned the banged-up defensive line. How has Kyle Shanahan and the defense, how have they restocked that D-line?
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
They've basically been playing defensive tackles at defensive end. I mean, they've got a team full of these tweener types. I mean, it's a very aggressive defensive line, so they're playing, you know, upfield all the time. So they're drafting defensive tackles who are, you know, 280, 285 pounds. And so they do have some movement skill, but, you know, most of those guys are having to play defensive end. So basically their only true defensive end, their only true edge rusher is Deion Jordan. And he has not looked all that good at all. They're really lacking in that department, which, you know, a lot of people thought, oh, that you know, if they're going to make a trade, it's going to be for an edge rusher. It's going to be for a defensive end. And they did bring one in, Jordan Willis from the Jets, not a household name. Frankly, they just don't have any cap space to do this. I mean, all of the, my colleague David Lombardi calls them microtransactions. Every time you bring a guy up off of the practice squad and whatnot, all these IR moves that the 49ers are having to do, it's not a lot of money, but it adds up over time. And basically, they they're literally in the thousands as far as salary cap space. I mean, they don't have the space to make any big moves, and I don't know what Seattle's salary cap situation is, but it sounds like the two teams are in the same boat as far as just needing real bodies on the edge of the defenses.
I want to ask you about Dre Greenlaw, because he's been, I would say, based on what we saw last season, he was someone that was highly regarded to play really well. How has he looked based on everything that's going on with injuries? How has he looked this season?
He's looked great. I mean, Quan Alexander just went down with a high ankle sprain. He's another starter who's injured, and Greenlaw took over just like he did last year, and looks excellent. I mean, Dre Greenlaw is a really good tackler, which you think, oh, he's a linebacker. Of course he's a good tackler. Well, in this NFL, that's actually saying something. He's one of the more tackle-efficient players, I should say, in the NFL. So he's been just a pleasant surprise. The fifth round for the 49ers, which is where they drafted Greenlaw last year, has been a gold mine for this team. That's where they got George Kittle. That's where they got DJ Reed, who's now on the Seahawks roster. I think the 49ers are regretting releasing him. But the fifth round has been the money round in San Francisco the last few years.
And the reason why I brought him up, people are probably wondering, like, why would you even mention Dre Greenlaw? Well, if you guys remember last season against the 49ers, Seahawks and 49ers, Russell Wilson threw his first, well, that was his first career interception for Dre Greenlaw. He picked off Russell Wilson, and I remember just, wow, this kid's going to be special. And you just mentioned him being a fifth rounder, and he's, you know, living up for the most part to expectations. So I just wanted to hear how he's doing, especially got his first pick on Russell Wilson. That was pretty big deal for him last season.
He also got the big hit on Hollister at the end of the 17 game.
That is true as well, yeah.
He hit Seattle twice last year.
Yes.
All right, scouting report. Stay away from Greenlaw.
Yes.
I want to, Matt, get you to my favorite question that I'm sure I've asked you before on the show, but we just got to – it's got to come up every time now, I feel like, because the answer is going to change. Is Jimmy Garoppolo good?
Yeah, he's good. Is he great? That I think is the question. And you know, with every NFL fan base, unless you're great, unless you're, you know, Patrick Mahomes or Russell Wilson, you know, it depends on the week. People are calling for your job unless you're throwing four TDs and 400 yards. And so that hasn't happened recently. Garoppolo is coming off his own high ankle sprain, and Shanahan has been basically protecting him with this offense. A lot of very short passes. I just mentioned the Debo Samuel stuff. You probably saw it in that Sunday night game against the Rams a few weeks ago. But they're not asking him to do a whole lot. I'm not sure he's capable of doing it. So far, it's been working. But like I said, you know, with the Seahawks, the Packers, the Saints coming up on the schedule, he might have to get into some shootouts here. And so, you know, the question is, do the 49ers have a downfield offense for him? And is his ankle healthy enough to really kind of give it a workout, push the ball downfield, which has been an issue in recent weeks?
How much of what I thought Kyle Shanahan was really brilliant on the Sunday night game, I that was the first time I got to really sit down and watch outside of the Philly game, but I don't know if he played in that. And I was just amazed. I was like, both of these coaches don't trust their quarterback to do anything, really, but they're both moving the ball really well. How much of Kyle Shanahan doing that is just physical limitations with Jimmy just as a talent, and then physical limitations in terms of health with the ankle?
I think for that game, it was very ankle-related. I mean, it's his right ankle, so it's the foot that he pushes off of. He's just not able to drive it down the field. You know, the other part of it is that, you know, Debo Samuel is coming off of a foot injury. He wasn't available the first 3 weeks of the season. Brandon Ayuk is a rookie. He's only recently started to kind of shine. And they don't really have a lot there after that. I mean, the receiving core, you know, despite a lot of draft picks in recent years, isn't all that prolific. So I don't know if they can go downfield if they wanted to. I mean, that's why they traded for Emmanuel Sanders at this point last season. and then, you know, basically rented him for half a year, and now he's with the Saints. So, you know, it, again, it's going to be a big question mark without Samuel how that passing game is going to work. George Kittle obviously is going to be a big part. I mentioned Ayuk. He's getting better and better each week. But after that, it's pretty slim. So, you know, there's no Raheem Mostert. There's no Tevin Coleman. There's no Jeff Wilson, who had over 100 yards this past week. So, again, the 49ers are kind of scrounging around, reaching to the very bottom of their hat to pull out guys. And so far it's worked, but yeah, at some point there's not going to be anything left.
You mentioned Brandon Ayuk and his big game against the Patriots. How big was that for him confidence-wise and Shanahan and the team just showing, okay, this kid, he can definitely bring something and we're going to use him?
Yeah, I mean, last year, this was the time of year that they traded for Emmanuel Sanders, and you saw Garoppolo, you saw the passing attack take a big leap. So I think the fact that Ayuk had this game right around the same time is encouraging for the 49ers, that, you know, he's their deep threat. He's got speed. He's a good all-around player. He's got great balance. He's good after the catch. He's not quite the wrecking ball that Deebo Samuel is with the ball in his hands, but similar. So the fact that he's starting to come into his own now, I think, is good. But again, he's all there is. I mean, Kendrick Bourne is good. Dante Pettis is on the trade block. He's been inactive, healthy scratch the last 3 weeks. So they really don't have anything at that position beyond Ayuk and Deebo Samuel, and now Samuel's out at least 2 weeks with a hamstring strain.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Well, I was going to ask about Dante Pettis, but there you have it. He's on the trading block and has been inactive for the last few games. I have nothing else on that regard from the receivers group.
I know he's a Husky, and you guys are following him, but he could probably be had for a seventh-round pick if the Seahawks are interested. I don't know if John Schneider is tuning into your pod, but if he is, that's probably the deal that would swing it.
I want to get into this division a little bit. It's easily the best division in football. Like, it's disgusting how good everyone is in different ways. Arizona and Seattle are getting it done with their quarterbacks and big play receivers, and then I would say the Rams and the Niners are getting it by with the offensive wizardry of their head coaches. Just in general, can the Niners, you think, repeat in winning this division based on how they're currently constructed?
Yeah, I mean, they're in last place right now, despite their winning record. So, you know, it's a long shot. I mean, when they play well, they play really well. You know, my whole take when people ask me is that they've got a week 11 bye, so they'll have played 10 games before they go into the bye. And if they're 5-5 at the bye, which I think is reasonable, they're 4-3 right now, and then they start to get some of these guys back, which they should, like Raheem Mostert and Tevin Coleman, Jordan Reed, the tight end. I think having Jordan Reed plus George Kittle would be a real advantage for them. But if they're 5-5 at the bye and they have these reinforcements come in at that point, then they've got something. I mean, I think that they would have a real confidence going into that final month of the season, that maybe they don't win the division, but they get into the playoffs and then they can do some damage. Because, like I said, they run the ball well, and they play not lights-out defense, but they play sound defense. And that's, you know, the Chiefs showed last year that's enough. You can win a Super Bowl with just having a merely good defense if your offense, you know, just like the Seahawks, if your offense can be relied upon for 30 points a game. So I don't think winning the division, you know, certainly being the number one seed in the playoffs like they were last year is all that realistic, but I think getting into the playoffs is certainly realistic. It would be nice if all four NFC West teams got in. I think that's mathematically possible this year, but probably the NFC South is going to have two representatives as well. So it might just be three or four teams.
Yeah, no, I'm not ruling out at all four teams from the NFC West getting in. Someone ultimately would probably be the odd team out, but man, everyone's looking very just competent right now, winning in like fairly sustainable ways. The Seahawks are a little iffy, and the Niners are too in that regard. We'll see what happens on Sunday. One more thing before we get into our prediction segment of the show. How did the Niners just revamp Jason Verrett?
Yeah, he's looked really special. The answer is that he came back last year and he had a cameo appearance in week three. He played, I want to say, four snaps, and he got burned on a deep ball for a touchdown on one of them, and everybody had just threw their hands in the air. They were finished with Jason Verrett. This guy's terrible. And he went on IR because it was clear that he wasn't quite back from a knee injury, but he stuck with it, and that's the thing with Jason Verrett. He stuck through it throughout all of these injuries, which have been nonstop since the 2016 season. And by the end of the year, he was rehabbing, and he started to get his speed back, his mile per hour. The little device that they have in their shoulder pads was showing him up, 20, 21, almost 22 miles an hour. And that really gave him confidence, and that kept building throughout the off season. And he went into this year as healthy as he's been, and you can literally see it from game to game. He gets a little more confident. He makes more plays on the ball. He takes more risks. He had a great interception against the Rams, you probably saw, week after week. So it's really a great story. I mean, if it wasn't for Alex Smith out in Washington, Jason Verrett would be a really great candidate for Comeback Player of the Year. Just, it's been one thing after another. Achilles, ACL, this, that, and the other for Jason Verrett. But he's starting to look like his former self.
Yeah, that's been a crazy. I didn't even realize this is how much out of touch I was with the Niners. I didn't realize he was like starting for the Niners until the Sunday night game, and I was like, that dude's still doing it. Man, he's got some talent. I mean, Russ is going to challenge him, so we'll see how that goes on Sunday. But yeah, he's definitely holding it down over there on the outside. It's prediction time. We are going to start with our over-under before we get into the game prediction itself. This week, we are going to go with Jimmy Garoppolo passing yards. If we were a little bit nerdier, we would do how many times he throws beyond the line of scrimmage, but it's okay. We'll just go with the raw number there. The Seahawks, I think, are giving up 360-plus yards per game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think it's the worst in the league by a mile.
Atlanta's right behind.
Not by a mile because the Falcons are a thing. But I think it's like those two, and I think Jacksonville's bad too. But anyway, so we'll put it at, I'll go 310.5 over under for Jimmy G Sunday. What you got?
I'm gonna go under.
Ooh.
And it's not necessarily a slam on Jimmy G, just the fact that 49ers have been so reliant on their rushing attack, and there's no Deebo Samuel. So I just don't think they're going to want to put the ball in the air. I mean, the smart game plan would be run the ball, keep the ball out of Russell Wilson's hands, and don't make Jimmy G have to win the game. So that would be the game plan, I think, that the 49ers would like. Now, if he goes over 300 yards, I don't think they'll complain, but I'd say it's below 310.
Yeah, have they held anyone under 310 this year? What did Kirk Cousins do?
I think Fitzpatrick might have had like two.
He had 300.
Yeah, 300.
Dude, everybody's throwing for 300 on the Seahawks.
I think everyone has. I think you're right.
It's not great. All right, Matt, what you got for us in a prediction? Who wins on Sunday? What's the score?
I thought that the 49ers would struggle with the Patriots. I mean, that's a cross-country trip. The Patriots had lost two in a row going into that game. They knew Jimmy G as well as anybody, and they got routed. I don't like, for the Seahawks, I don't like the fact that they played almost a four-hour game the other night. The 49ers game was over in 2:44. It's the shortest game I can remember. In terms of rest, the 49ers have a bit of an advantage. I don't ever bet against Russell Wilson, however. And two in a row, I know that the Seahawks defense is a far cry from what we saw in that 2013 championship game. But the 49ers' injury issues are just so deep. And they're at spots where Russell Wilson should be able to gouge this team. Safety, cornerback. There's no pass rush whatsoever. So I think it'll be a typical 49ers-Seahawks game where, you know, it's a slugfest and it's close. But I like Russell Wilson at the end of this one.
Oh, man, you guys heard Matt there. It'll be a typical Seahawks game, so have your drink of choice ready, maybe your blood pressure medication as well. It's going to be another stressful game. Thankfully, it's not on primetime. I think Seahawks would lose their freaking minds if they played three straight nail-biters in primetime. And just for fact-checking purposes, Kirk Cousins threw for 248.
Oh, wow.
That was the lowest of the year. Fitzpatrick threw for 312, so he would have
hit
the over, too. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, listening to the Seahawks Man-to-Man podcast. That is a homie, Matt Barrows, covers the 49ers for The Athletic. Go make sure you go cop his book. I'm very interested in that Sherm section alone. There, it's so funny, Richard Sherman even being involved in a book about the 49ers as a 49er. Like, it's just the evil villain. It just crossed over. Like, that's great. Matt, where can they follow you on Twitter as well?
I'm at Matt Barrows. Very easy. MattBarrows.
And are you verified on Twitter?
Oh, yeah, I'm verified. I've been verified since 2007, Mike.
Oh, wow.
I'm one of the OGs on Twitter.
Wow, so it's just Chris on the show this week that doesn't have the blue check. It's okay, Chris. We'll get you there. Thank you guys again for tuning in. We'll catch you guys after Seahawks 49ers on Sunday. Time to get-